Hello, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of the Extra Point Podcast. Today is Tuesday, April 2nd. My name is Todd Stiles. I'm one of the pastors here at First Family, and it's the first Tuesday after Easter 2024. Welcome to the podcast. Really glad you're listening. I was asked a question regarding Easter. Oh, it was a little before Easter, actually, and it intrigued me so much that I saved it for this podcast. Someone asked me my favorite Easter verse. I think it came in a conversation about how sometimes, as preachers, we preach on the same thing at least once a year, perhaps more. And they asked, the several Easter passages, not only the narratives in the Gospels, but there's doctrinal ones in the epistles and so forth. Hey, Todd, which one do you like the most, and how do you select, and how do you decide? And so we had that conversation, but I was really intrigued by the question, your favorite Easter verse. And so I thought, I want to answer that. And I want to say to you, admittedly, that's difficult for a pastor, for a preacher, to land on a single verse, because usually we're really passionate about the one we're preaching on at the time. So that's a hard question to answer. But I do want to try to give an answer, because I do have a particular verse that most excites me every Easter. You could call it my favorite. I think it's the verse that gives me the most amount of open doors with lost people, people who are far from God. I think this verse gives me the most opportunity to have important conversations with them. And I would add this, this would not be a verse that allows me a conversation with someone that I'm just meeting for the first time. Typically, this verse is one that God has allowed me to use with those that I'm in conversation with, I've been dialoguing with, I'm building relationships with, and I'm hearing their story, they're hearing my story, and we're kind of asking questions. There's a reasoning type of dialogue going on. This verse is the one that I find most helpful with those people. And it's in what I think is a tremendous chapter about the resurrection, 1 Corinthians chapter 15. Paul there doctrinally and logically and even humanly, and I would even say anthropologically, he deals with the fact and the importance of the resurrection. But in verse 32, the very last phrase of it, he makes a statement quoting either a cultural author, maybe a previous saying. He quotes something, someone, as a way to make a point about the resurrection and about the afterlife. And here's what he says at the end of verse 32, 1 Corinthians 15. This would be the one that I find most helpful all year long, especially at Easter. And this would be my favorite Easter verse. When he says this, end of verse 32, if the dead are not raised, and here's the quote, then let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we die. So did you hear within that last phrase that if there's no resurrection, then really we should not think about living with some type of perceived morality, or we should not worry about trying to be good in any sense. Just, eat and drink. Just go about your life, do whatever you want. In other words, there's a purposelessness that actually should overwhelm us if there is no resurrection. If there's nothing after this life, then really what's the point of this life? It's kind of the gist of that saying. And Paul is saying, if there's no resurrection, then really just live by that. Just go ahead and adopt that. And here's the reality that I find. My personal opinion here is that very few people actually believe that there is no afterlife. Now, there are a few that say they believe there's no afterlife. And there's a few that actually live that way. So in one sense, maybe they're being consistent. But I have found that as you reason with people, as you have further, deeper conversations with those who are far from God, most people say that there probably is something after this life. If they're really honest with you, they're going to say to you at some point, well, there's probably something. They don't know what it is. They're not sure how it unfolds. But most people intuitively know that there's more to this life and there's more after this life. They're just not sure how to talk about it. They're not sure if they want to admit it. And so that's why, inherently, they actually are moral to a certain degree. They're not going to be, irreprehensibly immoral and evil. They're not going to go breaking the law. And and fear spending life in prison, then what would that do to them later? They would think they have all these thoughts. They're not sure how to, you know, to package and understand. But if in all honesty, they were to speak to you about the afterlife, most people would say there probably is something else later. In fact, Solomon alludes to this in his writings in the Old Testament. He says that God has put eternity into their hearts, meaning, I think, innately people know there's something more after this life. And so often that's why people are on a search. They're inquisitive. You know, God is drawing people. And so we see in creation that there's something more. There's a creator. There's a maker. We are accountable to this one who's created everything. So there's all these, what we would call them theologically, all these elements of natural revelation. And so I do believe that innately and inherently, people know there's more after this life, but they don't know how to talk about it or express it. And this verse, especially at Easter, gives me so many open doors to explain to people really why they are living the way they're living, even when they're lost. Like why they're actually trying to, you know, have a certain level of morality, or why they're trying to reach a certain level of goodness, or why they don't do certain things and why they do certain things. Most people kind of adopt a do enough good works and you'll get in type of mentality. That's the theology. While it's false, of course, that's the theology of most people in America. They just believe that if you're good enough, you'll get in. And of course, most people, like I've told you before in much of my preaching, most people think they're just above the good enough line. They don't want to be proud and say they're way beyond it, but no one has the guts to say they're below it because they don't want to be out, right? And so most people just say, well, I think I've done enough. And so they hold this idea that, you know, good works is how you get in, which to me, what they're saying is there is something after this life. There's some kind of resurrection. There's some kind of existence beyond this existence. Otherwise, they wouldn't worry at all about their morality. They wouldn't worry at all about their good works. They wouldn't worry at all about niceness or kindness. They wouldn't worry about legacy. They wouldn't worry about leaving behind something for the next generation. Who cares? If there is no afterlife, just live for the moment. Live for yourself. It doesn't matter. But very few people actually do that. There's very few who live with a purposelessness. All of us know there must be more, not only to this life on this earth, there must be more to life after. And so I think this verse gives me an opportunity to have that conversation, especially at Easter, to reason with them that here's what that afterlife looks like. Here's why we know it exists, because Christ was raised from the dead in historical, factual, time and space reality, guaranteeing that there is resurrection for those who are in Christ, and what that afterlife looks like in the new heavens and new earth. And so then in there, just talking about the gospel, Christ's death, burial, resurrection, how it's really how all of us are reconciled to God once we believe. It's not a matter of our good works. It's all about Christ's finished work. So that conversation often happens after just asking people like, you know, why are you trying so hard to be good? Because you must inherently think there's something else to this life. And that, again, is a question I ask not when the first time I meet someone, but it's usually that question that I'm able to ask when I've had some dialogue with someone. Maybe I've met them two or three times, or we become friends, you know, in different environments. And so if you were to pin me down and say, Todd, what's your favorite Easter verse? It's probably this one, because of the open doors it gives me and the way it allows me to have reasonable, thoughtful conversation about the gospel with those who really have not thought about the gospel much. And so it brings a logical and theological tone to really what I think is a very illogical way of living that they're undertaking. And so I just kind of bring this to them over time, nicely, but thoughtfully. And it's amazing the amount of people that have responded with like, you know, Todd, I'll give that some strong thought, or I'll have a book with me, you know, a short version of a book that I like, and I'll say, would you read this before we talk next time, or I'll invite them to church. All kind of ways you can continue to reach out to people. But this verse has been the one that's opened more doors, especially at Easter, to have important conversations with people, because I do believe intuitively, people know there is more to this life and there's more after this life. And this verse helps me get into situations where we can talk about that. And truly, I think that's one of the responsibilities of all of us as followers of Jesus, is to be aware that the fields are white unto harvest, and then to be ready to give a reason for the hope that is within us. And this verse is one of the verses about Easter and the resurrection that I find to be very helpful in reasoning with those who are far from God.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.